Hey, before we get started on today's show, you know how much I appreciate the work of Adrian Wojnarowski. He's the Woj in our life. So that's why I should tell you about the latest episode of the Woj Pod. Celtics guard Jaylen Brown joins Woj to talk about his rapid rise, what it's like playing in Boston, Kemba Walker's influence on him, and so much more. If you want to hear that conversation, remember you can find the Woj Pod wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, leave him a review or leave us a review. Either way, we'd love to hear from you. And another quick word before we begin. If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. That's one of the things that all NBA executives will tell you. And it's one thing that executives in businesses across the country will tell you. Most companies don't have a clear picture of their business. And that's why so many businesses struggle to grow. NetSuite by Oracle is here to solve that problem. As a business owner, are you really confident you're making the right business decisions? Serious entrepreneurs and finance teams run on NetSuite, the world's number one cloud business system. They offer a full picture of your business in one place, finance, inventory, HR, and your customer data. No more guessing, no more worrying. You run your business with confidence with NetSuite. You can grow successfully on NetSuite like Ring, Hint, Bold & Branch, and over 19,000 other businesses. NetSuite, business grows here. And by the way, you can start your free product tour right now and receive their free guide, 7 Key Strategies to Grow Your Business, at netsuite.com/hoop. Set up your free product tour and get your free guide today at netsuite.com/hoop, H-O-O-P, netsuite.com/hoop. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. Joining us this morning from his boyhood home in Orlando, Florida, is Nick Friedel. Hi, Nick. How are you?
B, I'm headed to hot dog heaven in a few hours. I couldn't be better. It's great.
You never really were a boy because, according to you, you had this voice and chest hair when you were like 11. You sort of skipped boyhood, I'm pretty sure.
That's right. That's right. It was a fast transition, and the Shaq and Penny magic helped form my basketball fandom all these years later.
The O-Arena. And joining us from Los Angeles is Kevin Arnovitz. Kevin, I was a late bloomer, so I
was like Nick, a mustached 11-year-old. I was that kid.
Damn.
This is what happens when you bring two Jewish guys onto a podcast.
I can't grow a mustache to this day. So something happened. We're recording this Monday morning, by the way. There's a whole bunch of good NBA games today, but I don't know when y'all are going to listen to it, so we're going to kind of avoid that a little bit. But in a classic Friday news dump, late Friday, Woj had the story that Adam Silver waved the white flag on his really high desired schedule changes for the 2021-22 season. The year that, the 75th anniversary year, the year that he wanted to institute his midseason tournament and his postseason tournament and reduce the number of games. And Friday afternoon it came out that they weren't, after months of trying to get this in a position where he could get a vote on it at the April Board of Governors meeting, which they needed to have a year to get it, you know, set up. There was a white flag for Adam Silver. He was unable to whip the votes, and he's taken it off the ballot. Now, they haven't completely abandoned it. They say there's still time, but it was a defeat for him. And, you know, this is, on one hand, it's not surprising to me because for changes like this, you need 20 of the 30 teams to vote your way. And getting, you know, teams from the other conference to vote on anything. The other measure that was up was reseeding the conference final. So when you got to the conference final round, you would have a 1-2-3-4 seed and you would play, you know, give more of a chance for the two top teams in the league to play in the finals. And, you know, the thing that I said all along was that, you know, if you're an Eastern Conference team, and granted, the Eastern Conference has shown to be potent this season compared to the West. But for the last 20 years, the West has enjoyed an advantage. Why would even one Eastern Conference team vote for reseeding, much less the five that are needed? So I understand it was a tall order for Adam Silver here, but it really is an interesting referendum on where he is in his commissionership. David Stern, who is they're having a memorial service for him tomorrow in New York City. One of the things that was really crystallized under Stern was that when he wanted something, he could force the owners into line. And a lot of times they hated him for it. He was disliked because he was an authoritarian at times, but he could force things that he wanted through. Adam Silver completely operates the NBA in a different vein, and he doesn't have the same ownership sway. The owners like him a lot more. In some cases, they think he does a better job than David Stern. But he doesn't have that power, and this was something he wanted. He wanted a midseason tournament so that he could give organizations something else to win. He wanted his television partners to be able to have something else to sell. He wanted these changes to try to reduce the schedule load, to try to give some more time for rest. This was very largely an Adam Silver priority. And Kevin Arnovitz, he wasn't able to get it done. What's your reaction to basically, I'm gonna go ahead and say it. This is the biggest defeat of Adam Silver's tenure to this point.
Right. So there are a couple different implications here. The first, as you said, is though Adam Silver enjoys very favorable coverage in the media, while he's considered a far more congenial person than David Stern, as our friend Henry Abbott documented in his obituary of Stern, though, is you kind of have to be Lyndon Baines Johnson. It's harder to be Barack Obama, right? Like Johnson was a guy who could get stuff through, and you do it through, at times, extortion, bullying, and that's just not Adam's speed. Now, I would say there's another thing at work here, which is, as much as it might explain the difference between Stern and Silver, I also think it explains the differences between owners and today's owners. It's an entirely different crop of individuals. You were talking about masters of the universe who come from the private equity, from the venture capital world. These guys are not going to be dictated to by a skinny attorney. Okay? Like, this is not your, oh, it's the local auto dealer. It's the nice local family. It's Abe Pollin. Those guys are gone. And I also, so as much as we might want to draw a distinction between Adam Silver and David Stern, I think we also need to draw a distinction of these guys are not going to be persuaded in the way that these nice urban, the Herb Coles of the world, these lovely civic patricians who ran these civic trusts that were called local basketball teams. Now you're talking about billions of dollars in equity in each team, and these guys are not going to be dictated to by any commissioner. In fact, I wonder if Stern in some ways got out at the right time, right? Like how would he have functioned in a world where there's more and more of these kinds of owners? And frankly, owners are now asserting their power.
There has to be changes in how the league operates because so many of these regular season games are bad. The product just isn't very good. So I applaud Adam for trying to think out of the box and trying to try something new. But this wasn't it. When you talk to people in the bubble, whether it be players or coaches or people on these different team staffs, and you say, okay, well, are you guys excited about the possibility of a midseason tournament? It was either an eye roll or a and that was it. So I think everybody involved knows that you have to do something moving forward to either eliminate games, shorten the season, take out back-to-backs, find some way to make these regular season games more relevant. But a mid-season tournament for people inside the bubble and for people like myself. I mean, I'm a fan of the game. I've been a fan my whole life. As soon as I heard this, I went, no.
So, Brian, I talked to one source last night asking his explanation. He said basically too much too fast. What he said is, listen, we're only 18 months away from setting the 2020-21 schedule. So this idea that something this drastic, there's no rush.
21-22.
They believe that eventually it's going to happen.
Not next season, but the season after.
21-22. Okay. So, but essentially, this is too much too fast. And that they believe it'll happen at some point down the road. There is an acknowledgement that, you know, as Nick says, there needs to be reform on the schedule. And, you know, I can go 12 rounds on this if you want to. I don't think we do. But that it just was too much too quickly. Irrespective of the 75th anniversary commemoration, that's not reason enough to do it, was what I was told.
Well, that was a buffer. Saying they were doing it in the 75th anniversary season was a sales pitch so that if it went horribly wrong, they could just trash it and be like, oh, it was just a Jubilee experiment. You know, I think that's what that was. It was just a package to put on this to make an easier sell. You know, to me, the concept that I heard coming up on 15 years ago, I still think is more implementable. And I wrote about it and talked about it 15 years ago before we had podcasts. And I was frustrated that nobody cared about it then. And I'm frustrated that this is not being put forward now. I will tell you what it is. At the time, it was pioneered by Mark Warkentin, who was the general manager of the Denver Nuggets at the time. He sent me the proposal. The proposal was called Make Every Game Count. Now, I'm not saying that Mark came up with it himself. He's now, by the way, a scout with the Thunder. I'm not saying that this wasn't pitched in the 90s and I was in high school and didn't know about it. But this is what the pitch was. The pitch was, you know, and I'm going to go through this again because I still think that this could work. It's not being considered. I don't know why it wasn't considered then. The first seven teams in each conference make the playoffs as normal. Everything is exactly the same. The first seven seeds are set. For the eighth seed, the other eight teams in each conference, so you have seven in, eight out, the other eight teams in the conference are seeded 1 through 8, and they play a three-game single elimination tournament. You win three consecutive games, you win the eighth seed. You would do it at a neutral site. If for each conference, you would do it over 5 days so that nobody has to play 3 days in a row. You know, the East would play, you know, Thursday, Friday, Sunday. The West would play Friday, Saturday, Monday. And you could market it over the course of a year. Come to Las Vegas, come to Seattle, come to New York, come to Raleigh, North Carolina. Maybe Tampa, Florida, teams that don't have – cities don't have NBA teams. It very much functions like a college conference tournament. And the reason I think that's important, guys, is that a mid-season tournament like they have in European soccer is something that NBA fans, American fans, have difficulty relating to and understanding. And even the players themselves have a difficult time. You go talk to a European soccer player, it makes perfect sense to them that they could play one team on a Wednesday in one competition and another team on Saturday, or in the same team on Saturday in another competition. Now, granted, even that's rare, but that happens. I'm a fan of Tottenham Hotspur. Last season, Tottenham Hotspur played Manchester City twice in the same week in two different leagues. One meant a lot more than the other, okay? That's an unusual concept for American fans and players. But the college conference tournament is not. The concept of a college conference tournament is that no matter what you did during the regular season, whether you were 2-16 in conference, if you get hot, you can win your way in to the NCAA tournament. And yes, you're going to be a 16 seed, probably, or a 15 seed and be disadvantaged. But the experience for your fans and your players to win your way into that would be amazing. And I'll just bring this up this year. If this was in place this year, now granted this is an outlier situation, but just think if this play-in tournament existed in 2020, do you not think the Golden State Warriors fans would be extraordinarily excited about, oh my God, we may get Steph Curry back in March. We may get Klay Thompson back in March. What happens if we can win our way in? And oh my God, wouldn't that be amazing to play the Lakers in the first round? And the idea of a team being able to win its way in. Now, you would have to come up with some lottery guidelines, but the reason that was called Make Every Game Count was because when you would get to March and April, when so many of the teams that are out of it are completely letting those games go, they would still have reason to play because you wouldn't want to be the eighth seed in that tournament. You maybe want to be the sixth seed. You may want to be the two seed. There would still be reason for your fans to care about the games. Now, if you're a Sacramento Kings fan and you get to March 10th, other than just watching De'Aaron Fox play or whoever your first round draft pick is play, why are you still engaged? This, to me, is what could be sold to the American consumer, and you could actually make it an event. And yeah, there's a possibility that the first year, the neutral site would have very few fans at it. Guess what? You'd still be able to sell it as an incredible TV package. And yeah, there'd be some years where it would be a dud. Most college conference tournaments sometimes turn out to have the favorite win. But to me, that's the kind of implemented thing. And that has been around for a decade plus. So, Nick, I mean, would you watch something like that? And that wasn't even on the table. The play-in tournament this year that they were trying to implement would only have added a couple more teams, and the 7 and 8 seeds would be a result of a 4-team playoff. Does that sound interesting to you at all? Do you care about that at all?
B, it sounds a hell of a lot more interesting than what we have in place now. As I watch these regular season games now, on most nights, I'm just like, ugh. It's just bad. Most of these games are bad, and to the league's credit, I think they know that. I think they know that the run-of-the-mill Tuesday game in the middle of January is not going to draw a lot of people's interest. So anything would be better in this regard, and I'd add this caveat. Because of a confluence of factors going into that final game a couple years ago, I was at that Nuggets-Timberwolves game in Minnesota. It was essentially a play-in game. For that 8 seed.
It was a college feel, right?
It was awesome. The intensity level in that game was higher than any regular season game I can think of in the last few years, because those guys knew how much it meant to them and their organizations to get into the postseason. So anything that could replicate or come close to getting that feel in the arena, I am for, and I'm for that plan that you discussed, just because when you get to March and you're in Sacramento, why do you care? Why would you care other than, hey, who are these picks coming into the next draft?
Yeah, and the other thing, Kevin, is I think it's, regardless of whether what I just described is implementable or not, I agree that it was too much too fast. I think it's got to be something that people can understand and get behind. The complexity of this midseason tournament that was being reported on, where you would play games that would count in the regular season and towards midseason tournament qualifying, my head was spinning, and it's my business. I think it's got to be something that enables – I think two things have to be accomplished. One, it has to be something that people will be interested in. And two, it's got to be something that enables them to shorten the season, to materially say we're going to take it down from 82 games to 76 and get rid of almost all back-to-backs.
Yeah, I think it has to go further than 76. And look, there are a couple things going on here. I mean, one is they need products they can sell, because when you reduce the number of games, whether it goes to 76 or 70 or 64, which I think is a number that makes the most sense, there's a number at which the fan actually does increase his or her interest, and it's not 76. I don't think people flock to those 76 games because they're decidedly more meaningful than the 82. And I think there is a notion in the league, even among their research, that you really have to reduce the schedule. But if you do that, as you and I have talked about at length, you're going to have to find the revenue to make up, particularly the local broadcast revenue, which is the big thing. But Brian, I think, you know, Nick is absolutely right. And part of the problem here is structural, and it has nothing to do with, well, is the record here, or can, will this player roll his eyes, or will this fan understand it? It is what I call the Irishman problem. And the Irishman problem is, and we're seeing it in the local ratings, people are not consuming. Nobody under the age of 40 even has their regional sports network because they're not hooked up to cable. And right now, even though guys like Steve Ballmer have kind of contemplated it. You're not going to go over the top and say, hey, you'll just pick up our local games by going onto the app. It doesn't pay for itself yet because there's still enough older people, and grandma who doesn't watch any games still pays for the regional sports network through her cable package. And this is going to end. Right now you have places like Atlanta where there is this young, hip product and Trae Young, and nobody in that town under the age of 40 watches Hawks games. Why? Because they don't want to sign up for cable. This is going to increase every single year. And what the league knows is there are too many choices at night for you to decide how you're going to spend your time to settle on what Nick is talking about, Magic Nets on Tuesday night in January. Who the hell wants to watch that? No one in Orlando, no one in the New York metropolitan area wants to watch that. And this is going to get, and it's not going to be next year. It's not going to be three big releases on Netflix. It's going to be seven. And then there's going to be 11. And then the theaters are going to pretty much go concurrently with your house. And there is going to be no compelling reason to watch this crap product any night unless it is Denver, Minnesota, and winner take all. And that's the issue coming here. So I'm with you. It needs to be understandable. Europe gets it. We don't. At the end of the day, they're going to have to create something. And even a faulty midseason tournament, which you can globally distribute, will be more compelling than the aggregate of these local television viewerships. Do you know how many people are watching Charlotte Hornet games right now in Charlotte? My bar mitzvah got more attendees than the Charlotte Hornets get viewers, okay? it is abominable. And this league is acting like, oh, it's fine. We're doing great overseas. It doesn't matter. The American fan is tuning out, and he is going to continue to tune out. The better these movies get that come into your house, the better the YouTube clips get. But this is the fundamental issue that we get caught up, Brian, in. The seed here goes to this, and it's neutral site. None of that. You're missing the big, we're all missing the big picture, which is, this could very well become the vaudeville theater and Blockbuster Video. We've never had a sport die, and it's not going to happen in the next 20 years. But in 40 years, there might not be leagues the way we know leagues.
Well, look, I think Adam Silver, last year, he gave this incredible interview with Bill Simmons at the conference.
I was in the room.
Okay. And in what he said is that our ratings do not track with what our surveying of interest in the NBA is. There is a disconnect between people who are interested and want to consume the NBA and people who are watching the NBA. And that is a gigantic problem. It might be the most important problem the league is developing today, in that there's incredible interest in the NBA, maybe the highest level of interest the NBA has ever had, but dwindling viewership. And it's not just because there's people watching stuff on Netflix. It's because of the accessibility of the games are behind the cable wall. And they're behind the cable wall because that's where the money comes from. And that's
right. But Brian, if it were a compelling product, if you're a fan in your local market and you really love that team, you're going to sign up for cable because it's the only way you can watch that team. If people said tomorrow the NFL local,
there are a lot of people who are doing that.
No, they're dwindling every year is the point.
But there's the gray zone of the people who are casually interested that are only interested at the end of the season when the playoffs come.
But
so
that's who advertisers want. Movie studios on Thursday nights want to be able to reach 600,000 young people who are going to the movies on Friday and Saturday night. I mean, and those people are often casual viewers, and they're the ones most likely to be cord cutting. But and there's stuff beyond cord cutting. I mean, I don't think you and I fundamentally disagree on this point. It's an existential problem for the league.
Well, there's also something else, which is something I've been saying. I think the NBA needs a marketing correction, because I think that every single night, maybe not every single night, but virtually every night in the NBA, something special happens. Just the other day, we had an incredible game between the Pelicans and the Jazz, where it went to overtime with incredible call at the end of the game, even though it was the wrong call, and Brandon Ingram had 50 points. The NBA needs to market that on an average Thursday in January, great things happen because they do. Because you can turn on a Cavs-Grizzlies game and watch Ja Morant have three jaw-dropping highlight plays. And the NBA does not market that way. The NBA markets around individual players and individual high-profile teams. It doesn't focus on the routine greatness that happens in the league, which is one of the things that I think is different now from when I started covering the league 15, 17 years ago. I think every single night something amazing happens, and I think that should be what they say. Come to the NBA where you can see greatness from any player on any night. Come watch to see Devin Booker score 38 in a game, something like that. They have not tapped into that. They have focused only on the markets like, you know, Los Angeles and New York, where they know they can draw viewers. I don't think that they're putting in the investment in marketing the entire league. But that's I don't want to get too long off the court because we talk about, you know, on the court stuff. But it was a setback for Adam Silver, and we'll see where he goes from here. Guys, yeah,
I'd add this really quickly. You can watch Ja Morant's three dunks now in 10 seconds. This is the problem the NBA is going to have moving forward. Because I understand what you're saying. That Grizzlies game and seeing him play, it's interesting. He's playing and at a level and doing things that we haven't seen a lot of rookies do. But you can click on YouTube or you can click on Twitter and see those three dunks in 10 seconds and move on with your day.
Yeah, but I can see Patrick Mahomes. Games, I can see Patrick Mahomes three touchdown passes and one touchdown run in the same period. You know.
Yeah, but the difference is the Pat Mahomes game matters. Cavs Grizzlies right, fundamentally exactly. Doesn't matter. And Brian, I mean, this speaks to your point, which is the gray zone, is that gap between interest. The interest is, I think Ja Morant is really cool. You know what? I'll watch his highlights at the end of the week. I'll get a minute and a half. I think Nick's right. And the good news is the league knows it, right? Like when Adam said in that meeting with Bill Simmons was really important. It matters what they're talking about. It matters what they're saying. For years, you know, hey, we own social media. We're the NBA. We do it better than any other league in the world. And you realize, congratulations, you're winning Twitter. You can't monetize that. Especially if, again, to Nick's point, there's a 90-second highlight reel that you can get that absolves you from having to sit through 2 hours and 45 minutes of Grizzlies Cavs, which you and I love. I watched that game, by the way, Brian. I watched that game start to finish. That was fantastic.
Ja was great that night.
Oh, he's good.
I'm sad that we're missing a Ja Zion game today, but I got a feeling that we're going to have some relevant Ja Zion games coming into the future.
You bet.
You can watch him on Twitter, I guess. One of the more interesting teams that I've been watching closely recently are the Clippers. They've had a very interesting last month. Now, most people will remember that on Christmas Day, they played that fantastic game against the Lakers, which I don't think it was decided by this play, but had that fascinating play at the end where Patrick Beverley swatted the ball and it clipped LeBron's fingernail and ended up being a turnover in one of the more interesting replay reviews that you'll ever see. But a terrific overall game that was, and a huge moment for the Clippers, who are now 2-0 against the Lakers this season. But the Clippers have had, especially in comparison to the Lakers, watching those two teams operate this year has been pretty fascinating, not only because they're the, you know, arguably the two best teams in the West. You know, Denver and Utah would argue about that, I'm sure. But because the Clippers have kind of had a little bit of a clunky transition to Paul George and Kawhi Leonard being on the team. And it's led to some frustration at times with some of their players. Montrezl Harrell doing some complaining about, you know, them not having the same intensity as last season, night to night. Doc Rivers, you know, pushing back and saying, yeah, well, last season we were the 8th seed out of the 19th best defense. Stop talking about that as a great season. Kawhi had to come out over the weekend and say, hey, everybody calm down and enjoy this process. Enjoy this championship process. Paul George has missed, I think Paul George only played about 22, 23 games. because of the shoulder injury, and now he's out with a hamstring injury. Beverly has been out for a while. Harkless has been out for a while. Landry Shamet was out for a while. They haven't had their whole team. And there's just been some angst, Kevin, over on the Clippers side. Even though they have a great record, they haven't come together like we thought. There's been chirping, and you know, guys are getting ejected from games because there's so much frustration. And then the Lakers, despite being all rushed together this year, have wonderful chemistry, are having a blast, blowing teams out night to night. Everybody having good bonding and everything, nobody complaining about anything over there. Even though I still believe the Clippers are a better team, it's been an interesting ride for the Clippers to this point.
So there are two ways to look at it, right? I mean, the first is the only thing that matters is Kawhi Leonard plus Paul George, 14-4. As Kawhi has famously said in previous years, these are 82 practices, and pay no attention to what you're seeing, you know, when one of us is off the floor or we're just kind of romping our way through the Mid-South and on a Sunday against New Orleans, right? Like none of that. 14-4, that is the team. You saw it on Christmas Day, end of story. Or you believe that actually there are things to glean about a team's constitution when one of the two major players is off the floor. That we can look to the Toronto Raptors. You know, it was one thing that people talked about during the midseason is, hey, they're actually really good when Kawhi's not there. And at the time, did we think that that was any sort of signal to their overall championship quality? No, I don't think any of us thought it was all that meaningful other than, hey, it's a good story. But it was meaningful. I mean, what we see is maybe there are things you can glean about a team when one of those two guys is off the floor. And then the other thing that would give you concern if you want to be in the concern camp is continuity doesn't happen overnight. You need the regular season, whether it's 82 practices or not. There's got to be a critical mass of games where the five people who are going to share the floor at the most crucial moments, at the most crucial games, have some reps together. They've got some possessions together. And right now, the Clippers are very good when they have their, quote, closing five, whoever you think those closing five are. But, you know, it's far and few between. They go weeks just when they sort of get used to each other. And at the end of the day, yeah, it's all that matters is the core five. But if you don't have the requisite possessions together, it makes it a lot harder, especially when going up against, as you said, I've been around the Lakers. This is a well-oiled machine. It is the happiest place on earth. It is an era of veteran professionalism. They're already figuring out the telepathy. It is working. And I would be a little concerned. So I'm still in the first camp primarily, but I've started to stick a toe or two in this other camp.
Yeah, Kevin, a shout out to the story you wrote about the Lakers on ESPN.com. I thought it laid it out very well. And you talked to Frank Vogel, and he's making it work when a lot of people didn't think that was possible, given all the issues that team had over the summer. But specific to the Clippers, and to your point, I'm still in camp number one, believing that when these guys are all healthy and on the floor, they will be better than anybody else. And this, I feel like it ties into everything we've been saying so far in this conversation. The regular season, as a fan and as somebody who covers the league, I just think, all right, well, maybe it's not going to work over time, and we'll see that in the playoffs. But the Clippers still have the best players when they're healthy playing together in a system that it still seems like they believe in. I still would take Kawhi and a healthy Paul George and Doc Rivers being able to figure it all out in the end. I mean, I kind of feel like with the Clippers right now, and they're in their first year, but it was like kind of watching the Warriors last season in that all we need to do is get healthy. They'd lose some games, and you'd be like, why the hell are they losing these games? Are they really into it? They knew they were just prepping for the playoffs. And I still believe, contrary to our pal Timmy Bontemps, if Golden State's healthy, they dominate Toronto in the finals last year. They would have just rolled them. And people can disagree with that, but if Kevin's healthy and he's on the floor, I think that they have no issue dispatching of Kawhi and company. If the Clippers are healthy and the Lakers are much better right now than I thought they would be at this point, and if LeBron and AD can stay healthy, all right, it's a fun series, but count me in the group that believes that the Clippers will figure it out it will come together, and their ceiling is still higher than anybody else's.
I'm sorry, Brian, Andrew Hahn here. You're talking about the Clippers. I need to chime in just for a moment. This false comparative that Nick Friedel just put out, comparing this season's Clippers to last season's Warriors, a team that had won two in a row, a team that had won 3 in 4 years against the Clippers team, which I think we can all say we're high on, but hasn't won anything. What is he talking about?
Well, he's talking about more the scenario than he is actually comparing the quality of the two teams. But what he's basically saying is what Kevin did, which is that if Kawhi is healthy, and really that's the most important thing. I just think one of the things that I've noticed this year is that the holdover players from last season, specifically Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell, who played full bore every single night and played through injuries and grabbed and clawed for every single game because they needed every single win to claw into the last playoff spot, and they beat their chest for that they were able to overcome it despite their team, you know, making midseason trades to send talent away to better position themselves for the off season. That achievement to them felt like this was the way to do it in the NBA. And now they come into this season where Kawhi skips back-to-backs. Kawhi sometimes, frankly, as I watch the Clippers, Kawhi sometimes load manages within games. He will sometimes pick his spots within games. Oh, my God, when he turns it on, he can, in 3 or 5 minutes of a game, completely take a team to his knees. It's just a different style of approaching the season as it was. And on one side of the hallway, you have Kawhi Leonard saying essentially, let's take it easy, go for the long haul, this is a process. This is a man with 2 rings and 2 NBA Finals MVPs. He knows what he's talking about. Last year was a classic example. And at the other end of the hallway, you've got LeBron James saying, if I can play, if I can strap it up, I'm playing every single game, and we got to use every single aspect of this regular season to get us together. And that dichotomy, not only of the Lakers and Clippers this year, but of the Clippers from 2019 to 2020, is just an interesting thing that they are dealing with, and it's part of the process for sure.
Yeah, I would say 2 things. I mean, first is it's interesting how much our first topic actually dovetails with our second topic, right? And vis-a-vis Kawhi in particular. But also, you know, it's sad to say it because and Andrew can vouch for this too. Like, there was nothing more fun than last year's Clippers team. But if you're being a truth teller, do you say, hey, Trez, man, we love you, but would you rather be a 41-win team that wins 48 in actuality? Or would you rather be a 63-win team that only wins 60? You know, at the end of the season, I think, you know, therein lies sort of the tragedy of, and we're seeing it with the Brooklyn Nets a little bit too, where, look, I think the essential character of last year's Clippers team was so infectious and so awesome, and they were a joy to watch, and they were overachieving, and they balled out every single night. And yeah, it's a little more clinical this year, right? But at the end of the day, I think it's fair to say the 2020 Clippers annihilate the 2019 Clippers, spirit be damned.
And I'd add it, this, guys, I think it's fascinating. B, you mentioned that Kawhi is now kind of load managing at times during games during the year. That was the knock on LeBron going back to the end of times in Miami. And then
The flip switch.
At times in Cleveland. It's like the total switch, because now LeBron, after the embarrassing part of not making the playoffs last year, he's playing hard. I mean, I'm stunned, frankly, how hard he's been playing in these games in November and December, and it's part of the reason why the Lakers are off to this great start.
I also want to say that LeBron is enjoying this regular season more than he's enjoyed a regular season in a long time.
The key. Yeah, that's the key. There was an embarrassment factor of last year that they didn't do it. Has LeBron fallen off? I mean, that spawned a million segments on The Jump. is LeBron still close here? But LeBron is trying to show that he's at the level still that Kawhi Leonard is at. I mean, Kawhi Leonard has won Kawhi Leonard knows what it takes to win. We've seen it. We have not seen it from LeBron in the last couple of years, and I think that's a crucial difference.
Well, two years ago in Cleveland, he was there. But go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, I was going to say, it almost makes you wonder, what would these guys look like if they only played 55 games a season like LeBron did last year? or Kawhi Leonard played. Like, oh, you mean there wouldn't even be load management? They would be kind of, that's a good amount, and you're done with the season, and you come back, and the next year you're just as energetic, and you don't, it's not like watching a vehicle chug up a hill every year. Like, wow. I mean, not to bring it back to the first topic, but I'm always interested in how much the conversation when we get down to, you know, on the court actually goes right back to that first thing, but I'll say no more. I think I've made my point, but yeah, wow, this is what LeBron looks like when he's only played 55 games in the previous 12 months.
You know, the other thing is, so Kawhi over the last five games has looked great. Now, Paul George has been out with the hamstring, and there's going to be another adjustment for them when he comes back. But this coincides with a stretch in the Clippers schedule where there's a lot of rest. Kawhi, I think they're playing tomorrow against Dallas, Tuesday against Dallas. That will be Kawhi's sixth game in 15 days, which is similar to a playoff type schedule, especially a finals-type schedule. And Kawhi is having his best run of the season. And I think that's one of the things that when he over the weekend said, hey, enjoy this process, or I guess it was late last week, he said, enjoy the process, guys. Don't be in such a rush. Take it easy. When Kawhi has that time to recover and moderate the games and look so fantastic, no wonder he feels so good about himself and where the Clippers are. But it'll be fascinating at the end of the season, where, you know, who feels better about the way the regular season went. And as somebody who went with the journey with the Cavs for those years, and it was basically four slogs through the regular season and then four incredible postseason runs, although they only won one finals, all of those runs were amazing in one way or another. I can tell you that LeBron benefited from that Clippers style attack. So it will be an interesting thing. The other thing I think that is a factor is that Kawhi and Paul George, the two guys who are leading this team, the two guys who need to be healthy, neither of them are vocal, outspoken leaders. They both lead by example. LeBron is a verbal, outspoken leader. So when he sets a tone, whether it's take it easy during the regular season or whether it's hit the hammer during the regular season, whichever he's in the mood to do, it's an easier sell within the team, I think, than when Kawhi does it, when Kawhi sort of doesn't say much, spends one out of every six games in a suit. It's a little bit harder to the guys who are used to going at a different speed. Very much keeping an eye on the Clippers right now. They're having a very fascinating season, with a lot more season left. Right, Andrew? Oh, he went away. All right, well, thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Nick. Thank you to Troy back in Bristol. And everyone, we'll talk to you later this week.